This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, we should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. So excited for today. We've got Phil Webb. Phil Webb is an insurance agent from Access Insurance, but he's really not on the show today to talk about insurance. In fact, we don't talk about insurance at all. So this is actually based on an article that was on the Generation Squeeze website. Phil was a guest author for Generation Squeeze, talking about housing subsidies for multi-millionaires.
Adam, here's a question for you, and this is the one we put to Phil. Why on earth do multi-millionaires not have to pay property taxes every year? That doesn't seem fair. And that's what we're talking about today. There are loopholes in British Columbia that don't exist elsewhere that basically give multimillionaires an out at an extremely low interest rate to defer their property taxes. It's not fair. It's not right. And Phil's on to talk about it.
And it's a great conversation. The thing about this conversation is that it starts with that. That's kind of the seed. But then when we actually start unpacking it, it kind of covers a lot of the different policy in BC. And I think there's some good dialogue here. I kind of play the contrarian because, let's just say I'm an advocate for the seniors. You know, I like
You're a fat cat, Adam. You're a fat cat.
I like to work on your behalf, Matt. Here's the thing. It's a good conversation. We cover a lot of ground. And I do think that Phil is a good champion for this. And I think it's something that should be talked about. So it is a great conversation. But before we get to that, Matt.
Before we get to that, we have the segment that remains nameless, Adam. This is our quiz segment that we have every week. I got one for you this week. You know, the stats came out. We've talked about them quite a bit. The January stats, not a lot of good news there. And I'm still kind of going through them. And I have a question that came from the stats, Adam. It's not about Vancouver, but it is about a municipality in Metro Vancouver, Ladner, Adam, the place you monitor closely. In January 2026, the Ladner attached market, so that's condos and townhomes, the Ladner attached market had 60 active listings.
Okay.
How many sales did it record? And because you're not as familiar with Ladner, Adam, I'm going to give you four options. A, 7 to 9, B, 4 to 6, C, 1 to 3, or D, 0.
Okay.
This is a sales ratio question, Adam. Ladner attached market. But before we get to that, this is where we usually talk about one of our listings, and we have a number of listings coming up after the family day long weekend. But what I wanted to do this week, Adam, was to basically put out a plug for us as real estate agents. We don't do it enough. In fact, I often talk to people that don't know we're actually active in the market. We have worked with hundreds of people that listen to this podcast, and we want to work with more of you. I feel like it's some of the greatest client experiences we have. So if you're interested in buying, selling, or talking about real estate, we'd love to talk to you. It's as easy as that. VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. You can sign up over there. ScalinaRealEstate.com is another place. Or you can just get in touch at any point. Matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And Matt, you should mention the perfect 5-star review score that we have.
Oh, yes. Our Google 5-star review. That's ScalinaRealEstate.com. I think we actually have 5-star review at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
We do. So let's jump into this. I'm going to say, so first of all, the 10% sales ratio is a popular percentage across the board. So I'm kind of tempted. I think you had one of the options was 6 to 9 or in that range.
7 to 9 or 4 to 6, Adam.
7 to 9 or 4 to 6. But I'm also aware of the fact that you chose this for a reason. So I'm going to say 0. And I haven't looked.
You are correct. Ladner did not have a sale in the condo and townhome market in January. It was the only market in a dismal month. It was the only area that got totally skunked with 0 sales. In any event, pretty incredible, right? 0 sales.
That's unfortunate. These stats, you know, my feeling is that these stats, the market felt busier than these stats suggested. It'll be interesting to see what happens in February. I've been talking to a lot of mortgage specialists, a lot of brokers, a lot of people at the bank. The general consensus seems to be that they are doing a lot of pre-approvals, but they are not seeing a lot of pen to paper. I would say that's very similar to open houses right now. I was just at, I feel like it's a gym that only realtors go to. It's the weirdest gym on the planet, but I was talking to some agents today.
Is this
nameless?
I was going to say the gym might be like, hey, cool it. Yeah, cool it with your plug.
Does the board own this gym? Anyways, I was talking to a few people there. General consensus is opens seem to be busy. Lots of people coming through the opens. So like what's happening here? I feel like there's people watching. There's people ready to jump back in. It's just, we're not seeing as much pen to paper. So we'll see what happens. And interesting times.
I should say, Adam, the other thing, thinking about last week, I think I mentioned the first 4 days of February being busier. I actually met a client last night who listens to the podcast who said, hey, I heard it's really picking up. I just want to stress, 4 days does not make a trend. 4 days does not make a trend. Yeah. Let's not get ahead of our skis here.
Yeah, 1 month doesn't make a trend either. So yeah, January was could have been a one-off. We'll see.
Absolutely. But let's talk to Phil. This is a great conversation. I feel like these engaged citizen conversations. We used to talk to a lot of these guys. I love these guys. It's insomniac up all night thinking about tax loopholes and how we should close them. I love it.
Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentera Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentera is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing, because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown, and we're the founders of Oakwin Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia.
Serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakwin, please reach out to us at oakwin.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much, and we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Okay, so we're here with Phil Webb. He is an insurance agent with Access Insurance. Welcome, Phil. Thanks for taking the time today.
Hey, great to be here. Long-time listener, first-time caller. So I really appreciate you guys giving me your soapbox to stand up on and project my message out to the masses.
In thinking of that message, Phil, and maybe start by telling everyone just a little bit about yourself, but then we'd love to kind of hear part of the reason why we wanted to have you on today.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot. Appreciate that, Adam. I am Vancouver-born and raised. I currently work as an insurance agent at Access Insurance Managers, but I'm not appearing here on behalf of my company in any official capacity. Please, HR, please calm down. Don't worry, it'll be okay. What I'm here to talk to you about is, maybe I should go back further and say, I understand a lot of your audience probably is already entrenched homeowners already. And what I'm here speaking on behalf of is the youth of British Columbia today who are essentially priced out of the market. I should also clarify that, so maybe give a little bit of a background on the the overall picture of what it's like to be a young person in British Columbia right now and the situations and challenges that are being faced. I should clarify that I do not represent any industry lobby and I have no political party affiliation. As I mentioned, I'm working at Access Insurance, but I am not here on their behalf. Furthermore, I have no formal education on this topic, no training or any certification. I am merely just an insomniac on the spectrum who reads way too much and cares about our society. So
Noted.
That's the great news for all your listeners is you are perfectly free to disagree with me completely because I am a nobody and my opinion means nothing. So we all got that?
Good. We're good. Now let's hear it.
Yeah. The most important thing I'd like to just sort of start the conversation off is to remind all of the viewers that in Canada, it is constitutionally forbidden to discriminate by age. It's a protected characteristic, just like religion, gender, ethnicity, and country of origin. And what I'm here to talk today about flows from a topic you guys have touched on in many episodes, but I don't know if you've really ever done a good deep dive on that, is that a massive generational wealth gap between younger and older generations here in BC. And in Canada too. Paul Kershaw, Generation Squeeze, who's a great guy. He's done a lot of really great work on this. And so if you can go to his website, gensqueeze.ca, you can see a lot more on this topic and just see how tilted things are for youth today in BC. Like I said, there's a huge wealth gap. It goes beyond housing. Senior citizens enjoy discounts at pretty much every business that they go to, including many government services. They also enjoy preferential taxation of their income and their property. And about 50% of all government spending is benefiting senior. The system more or less took shape about 60, 70 years ago. And that was when seniors were around only 7% of our population and they had really high rates of poverty. According to Statistics Canada, today seniors are almost 23% of our population and they are the wealthiest demographic in Canada today. Meanwhile, millennials and Gen Zs are going to be the first consecutive generations in Canadian history to experience declining living standards. Now, it is in housing that this wealth gap is most obvious, and British Columbia and Lower Mainland has the least affordable housing in all of North America. If we assume the status quo, most British Columbians under the age of 40 will never be able to afford a home. Meanwhile, there are many seniors who are now multimillionaires just through their housing equity. How did this happen? Well, to summarize it up, and like it's a really broad topic, I know, but to summarize it in 30 seconds or less, over the last generation, so last 30, 40 years, provincial and federal governments have stoked demand by flooding the market with cheap and easy credit and a whole cacophony of housing subsidy programs. At the same time, municipal governments have been grossly negligent and have not allowed supply to keep up with demand. The BC NDP government, I think, has done actually some pretty clever changes to help municipalities increase supply, but there are still many subsidy programs that they are pursuing and promoting that artificially drive up housing prices. My argument is that we should cease those subsidy programs that artificially inflate housing prices, especially when those subsidies are benefiting people who are already very wealthy. And the most obvious of that is the property tax deferral and the way that we administer that system here in British Columbia.
So, Phil, before we get into the property tax deferral, what it is and what the issues are with it, it's actually, I think, really interesting that kind of history lesson of the growing percentage of seniors and what they represent, right? That it used to be a smaller percentage and more impoverished. Now it's a higher percentage and the wealthiest segment of Canadian society. Do you think, I guess the question I have is, you know, I think you called it, we're tilted in their favor. Why are we so tilted in seniors' favor, do you think? Is it because these policies came about at that time and then demographics shifted? Or is it because they're a strong voting block voting for their interests? Or I'd love to hear your thoughts on how we kind of got to this place.
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, you talk about 50 or 60 years ago, it was a very different picture. And most people could say, yeah, sure, grandma could use a little bit of help. And there weren't that many of them around. And you say they've definitely, the demographics have definitely changed. There's a lot more of them now. And they're a very large and very significant and very important voting bloc. And, you know, the politicians I talk to have been, some of them have been very candid and say, yeah, you make a great case, but this is political suicide. So it's a combination of the two. And we still have, for some reason, we still have this narrative stuck in our head that every senior citizen is financially impoverished and stricken and living on a fixed income. And that's not true.
And the other thing, and we'll get to the the tax deferral here. But the other thing that struck me when I was just looking into it before we came on is that the age is still 55, which is, I mean, I don't know. I'm getting close.
It seems young because you're getting older, Matt.
Is that right? I don't know. If you see the average 55-year-old out there, does not seem like they need a break on their Tim Hortons coffee just because they're 55. That seems pretty young.
55 is the eligibility for this property subsidy. There's lots of other seniors benefits that kick in at 65. But then there's other seniors benefits that you can start qualifying for at 60. And again, that has changed dramatically. 55 and 60 are no longer old. Those are your prime earning years. So the argument that those are people who need assistance is lacking, in my opinion.
What about just thinking about a lot of boomers in their 70s and 80s right now? How do you think of this in the context of the wealth transfer? And I know not everybody has parents that own houses on the West Side, but how are you thinking about this as in this huge transition of wealth to younger generations that we've been talked about is in process and coming?
Well, to talk about the wealth transfer is and the people who I think maybe I'll touch on that, but I think it's best before we start getting into nuts and bolts, because that is a really good question. But before we get into nuts and bolts, I think we should look at the subsubsidy and talk more about
how
it works. Speaking of the nuts and bolts, I
would like to answer that first. There are people out here who promote this property tax deferral subsidy, and I'm happy to talk about them a little bit. One of the things they do to promote it is they say it's the cheapest loan you'll ever get, and most people don't even pay it off. So the loan ends up being collected against the inheritance that the kids would receive. So in another way, this is, again, the younger people subsidizing the elderly.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we should get into the deferral. Let's actually like break it down. What exactly is the deferral that we've kind of referred to a couple times here?
Okay. Nuts and bolts. Here we go. Fun stuff. In the province of British Columbia, banner headline, and then I'll get nuts and bolts. Banner headline. In the province of British Columbia, if you're 55 years or older and you own your own home, you essentially don't have to pay your property taxes. Into the nuts and bolts, the way this works is rather than pay your property taxes every year, you can get a loan from the provincial taxpayer. The province pays your property taxes on your behalf, and then eventually that loan accumulates and you pay off that loan when you sell your home. This was a subsidy program that was created back in 1973, and it was meant to help people who are cash poor, house rich, retire in place. The loan, as I said, it is the cheapest loan that you'll ever get. The loan is supposed to be below Bank of Canada prime lending. It doesn't compound annually, and you get to pay it back with a tax-free revenue from the sale of your home. So it's a very generous benefit to the people who are receiving it. Now, I've always known about this subsidy. I've always thought it was kind of dumb, because as much as we do have a housing crisis in British Columbia and an affordability crisis of housing, there's still one group of people who have succeeded and benefited tremendously from the housing crisis, and that is older homeowners. So I've sat there and asked, why are we providing a housing subsidy for older homeowners who have benefited tremendously? And then eventually I went, as I call it, fully autistic on the thing and got all this information and learned more and more about it. And all of my suspicions were true. And it is, in fact, very much a subsidy that's enjoyed by multimillionaires and even some billionaires.
So I get the multimillionaire, billionaire, and the people with the means taking advantage of this subsidy. What about the fact that there's generally like a lot of people out there that are house rich with very little income that can afford this tax? So, because I think that definitely is the case. And I mean, we see that on the ground, people that have to get into situations of reverse mortgages, which can be very complicated and stressful for families and inheritance and everything else. So what about people that genuinely need it?
Well, I would challenge you on that statement that there are people who genuinely need it and who are genuinely house rich, cash poor. And back in 1973, there weren't a lot of mechanisms or products in the financial markets that allowed you to tap the equity in your home. Today, that has changed dramatically. Any financial institution you could walk into, and within an hour, you could walk out with a reverse mortgage or a home equity line of credit. So there's many ways that people can tap the equity in their home. So to go back further, though, if you own, let's say, a $2 million home in British Columbia, which is not insane, that's not unreasonable, and you've owned that for, let's call it 20, 30 years, there's probably a significant amount of housing equity in there that you can tap into. And if you don't want to do that, that's your choice, and you should be, you shouldn't be relying on the taxpayer to subsidize that. So you can...
Yeah,
so you can tap into the housing equity of your own home on your own dime, or you can choose to sell your home and move on. I don't think that we should be subsidizing people who have millions of dollars.
So then you're kind of in a situation where you're potentially forcing a sale, which I think is part of the reason that this likely came about, right? Is nobody wants to kick granny out of the house. Well, what about if you're, so just so I understand fully, are you arguing to do away with the subsidy altogether or to, because I'm just thinking a reverse mortgage can be very expensive from a cost to borrow that money or to get a reverse mortgage, or some of these instruments can come at, you know, prime plus half a point or even higher, right? So, or are you arguing that the money shouldn't be so cheap for the subsidy?
Or is it also that if you actually are still making over 80 grand a year or something, then you shouldn't be, sure, you should not get access to the, let's break it down.
Yeah, no, and those are all very good, valid points. I personally argue that the subsidy should just be done away with completely. If you cannot afford to pay your property taxes, then the harsh economic reality is that you cannot afford your home. And the whole retire-in-place subsidies that we adopt, there is even an argument that those subsidies are causing harm rather than benefit. But they're popular, so away they go. If we look at what other provinces do, it kind of gives you an idea of just how distorted and how messed up the BC system is. Pretty much every other province that runs this program uses some means of either income or net worth to exclude wealthy people from benefiting. Ontario and Quebec both have income thresholds, as does Saskatchewan. And in Manitoba, they say if your home is worth more than $300,000, then you don't qualify for this program. The Maritime provinces all require that you be enrolled in the guaranteed income supplement, which is essentially welfare for seniors, before you can qualify for deferring your taxes. Every other province charges a much higher rate of interest, and BC's is the lowest qualifier at the age of 55. Everybody else is qualifying you at the age of 65, except Quebec is 60. So we have by far the most generous program. And because we haven't implemented any kind of criteria to exclude wealthy people, we have examples of not only some very wealthy people, but actually outright billionaires who are benefiting from this program.
Do we have data to suggest what percentage of the 23% of seniors are actually using this deferral in the Lower Mainland or even in BC?
Yeah, the BC Office of Seniors Advocacy is promoting this program, and they did a study in 2023. They're promoting and trying to get more people involved. They did a study in 2022, and they showed, I think, that it was only 18% of the people that could qualify for this program are exploiting it. And so they're out there trying to get more and more people to exploit it. I also have numbers of how many households in British Columbia and what percentage in some cities and the overall province. And we can share those later if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, I would like to know that, because, you know, it strikes me, and I'm just, this is literally thinking out loud here, that of the 18%, it's probably people that actually need to defer their taxes, like that are feeling stressed. Hold on. Or sophisticated investors, right? Because when you, Phil, reached out, my initial thought was, I got 9 years till I can get a hold of this cheap money and invest this in the market, right? Like, and I'm not calling myself sophisticated, but I'm definitely calling myself an opportunist who sees
hate the game.
Yeah, exactly. So is that your read on who's actually taking advantage? It's like people that are stretched, or the millionaires and billionaires, you know, the Point Grey set?
The overwhelming data that I've been able to pull out has shown that it's mostly the millionaires and billionaires who are exploiting this system for profit. But that's because I've been focusing on the Lower Mainland, and I haven't looked at, you know, other cities where you're going to see more people who probably could be needing this subsidy. Like, I haven't looked at Armstrong or Vernon or other areas which tend to have lower property values and tend to trend younger. So
So can we talk a little bit about that, where you're seeing this being used? Because just to be clear, if you're 55 and you're, you know, the CEO of a company and you clear $1 million a year and you own a $10 million home, you can defer your property taxes.
Yep.
So can we talk about kind of where your research is suggesting this kind of is being utilized?
Yes. Yes. I think, and the Vancouver Sun ran an article back in October that highlighted the examples of extreme wealth in the Lower Mainland that are benefiting from the subsidy. I got a hold of a list of the most expensive, the 500 most expensive personal real estate holdings in British Columbia. And so I just ran through that list and checked to see who's deferring their taxes and who's paying their taxes. And we found 8 mega mansions on Point Grey Road who were exploiting the subsidy. And I found 4 waterfront estates over on Bellevue Avenue in West Vancouver who are also benefiting from the subsidy. Of the, so about, I think it worked out to about 7 or 8% of the super wealthy homes in British Columbia are benefiting from the subsidy. If you want, I can share with you, let's see if I'll share this. One of my favorites was 1188 West 55th. He's sitting on a proper 1-acre lot. I got his listing here and he's got it for sale. So this is 1188 West 55th. It's sitting on a 1-acre plot of land at about 55th and Oak.
For the listeners, this is a very, very nice home.
He's got a tennis court. He's got a pitch and putt golf range here, sand trap, nice, beautiful Japanese. I mean, it's a really beautiful property. 15,000 square feet, 6 bedrooms, an elevator. Oh, this is my fave. He's got a 7-car garage. and an elevator, wine cellar. It was assessed at $20 million in 2024, and he's got it listed for $28 million. And we are paying taxes to subsidize his housing.
So, and just for the listeners, what would his property tax bill, do you have that information?
In 2024, his property...
It's not a couple thousand bucks, right? Like this.
Yes. In 2024, his property tax bill would have been about just under $90,000. This year, it would have gone up because now he's paying as a luxury home. But he can still, he would be taxed as though he was a luxury home, but he's not paying his taxes. So what if?
So I'm curious because Phil, so yeah.
I do know who owns this home, but I'll refrain from mentioning him on the air.
I'm thinking about, okay, because you're making a lot of great points. I think what I want to understand more is why you think we should just do away with it altogether as opposed to structure it in a way that it would still be somewhat favorable to people that might need it. And maybe unpacking that argument a little bit. And just to kind of, like, just to play devil's advocate a bit, say the perhaps immigrant family that came here and scraped together in the 1960s to buy a house for $40,000 on the east side or whatever, that are now have watched over the years their the costs of ownership skyrocket dramatically with the cost of their housing. Should they be in a position where they should be paying now, you know, 12 grand a year or whatever their property tax is, you know, when they bought it thinking that property taxes were whatever they were at that time? Like, can we contextualize like their situation?
Yeah, well, no, I can definitely understand that argument from that kind of a perspective. Hey, we bought this house for 40 grand. Now it's worth 3 million. We've got a combined pension income of $50,000. So that $12,000 property tax is a real nut for us. But again, I go back to the fact that they own a $3 million asset. Like, they are literally multimillionaires. So if they've benefited from the housing boom, like they just bought a home, which is like, they didn't invent a longer lasting light bulb. They didn't cure cancer. They bought a home. Sure. Yes, they've benefited and that's fantastic, but they should also be having to pay for that benefit. As I said, they're now multimillionaires. I don't think that we should be giving them housing subsidies, but I do understand that argument. I just disagree with it. So, and as I said, there's many avenues available in the public sector for them to be able to tap their housing equity. And at the end of the day, though, if they can't afford to pay their housing, if they can't even afford to pay the cheap rate of property taxes that we have here in British Columbia, then they should sell their home and move on and pocket the money.
So Phil, one thing that's kind of curious here, you know, apart from just cynical politics, like very cynical politics, which maybe is just that's actually a good explanation. But the NDP has been in power since what, 2016, 2017?
2015.
2015?
It was 2015. Oh,
okay. 2015, NDP came in.
2015. Okay. This strikes me as something that they could use as fodder. This is a great grandstanding moment. Why have they not attacked this program? And in fact, it sounds like you're saying they're advertising this program, or there's a government office that's advertising this program, like, hey, you're not taking advantage of this crazy benefit.
Yeah, no, it is incredibly frustrating, because I have spoken with several public officials, elected officials, and the overall knee-jerk reaction is, you know, you don't touch seniors' benefits, regardless of the situation. Like, as I said, one guy said, you make a great case, but this would be political suicide. I'm not touching it with a 10-foot pole. I really think, too, it's, you know, you get into politics, that it's really hard to engage. A lot of politicians are unable and unwilling to engage with voters on anything beyond the banner headline. Like, you had Nikki Sharma today saying, oh, Jimmy Pattison's in bed with ICE. Boo! You know, that's the banner headline. But you just dig past that and there's so much more to it, right? And this is a policy that's a bit wonky. It does take some explaining. It doesn't fit nicely into a banner headline. And so I think the knee-jerk reaction that they're afraid of is from they're afraid of a knee-jerk reaction from the electorate, rather than just explaining in bigger detail just how flawed this policy is. The article that we had in the Vancouver Sun was obviously very good, and Dan Fumano did a fantastic job of explaining what is a very complex process and a very complex problem in a very simple and addressable way. But the real argument here is not just the banner headlines of the multi-billionaires who are benefiting from this subsidy, but even the average beneficiary of this subsidy is already very wealthy.
So I want to talk, I mean, you mentioned it before. Let's, you know, okay, I think everybody listening would be, or watching, kind of understands, okay, the government's subsidizing property taxes for the wealthy. They're doing it seemingly in perpetuity. If you live to 85 and you start at 55, you go 30 years of not paying property taxes and getting money at an extremely cheap rate to do whatever you want with it. But, you know, just on its face, that seems unfair. And yes. Can we talk a little bit about the bigger harm that you see to society?
Exactly, yeah. Well, as I said, you have a situation in British Columbia where pretty much everybody under the age of 35 is completely priced out of the market and will never be able to afford a home. When you consider that home ownership in Canada, or home ownership has always been the number one pathway to building wealth in Canada, you have now essentially shut out two generations from that pathway to wealth. That has negative effects on our society. Canada has always been a meritocracy. We work on the social contract that anyone, more or less, anyone can come here, get a good education, work hard, and achieve well in life. And traditionally, your income, your occupation, and your level of education were always very good indicators of how well you would succeed in life here in British Columbia and in Canada. That is no longer the case. No matter what level of employment you have, or education, or how much money you make, you're still priced out of the market. With the barring of a few exceptions, you're going to be priced out of the home market. The only people who are able to afford homes in the younger age group now are the ones who are getting major help from the bank of mom and dad. So what that means is that we're no longer a meritocracy, and our society has, in fact, I guess, regressed more to like a medieval society where the landowning nobility enjoy a comfortable life and the rest of us toil for nothing. I'm a great example of that. I came back to Canada in 2009 with 20 grand in my jeans and found a job working in the insurance world, did what I could, worked hard and achieved quite well. Both my wife and I are in a similar boat. We have an income that puts us easily in the top 1% of Canadian households, and yet we're still stuck in a crappy two-bedroom condo in East Vancouver. Meanwhile, I look across the street and there's Mrs. Richardson, who's a 67-year-old retired teacher, living alone in a four-bedroom home. And the only reason that she gets to do that is because I'm paying her property taxes. So that doesn't seem fair to me. So that does that sort of answer like how this is affecting society? And
that makes sense. What about from a, I'm curious to hear about how is the provincial government making up this tax base? Or are they? Is this like, where are we getting the money from?
It's great because they pretend it's not a cost for them. They just say, oh, we get that money back later. It's not tax relief. It's a tax deferral, which actually they do kind of have a point. The net cost of running this program is probably quite low, but it is tying up a lot of assets. There's, I think we looked at it last year, the government has about, or the provincial government has about $2.4 billion tied up in this scheme, which is more than, I think it was almost triple what they have tied up in student loans.
So couldn't they, I mean, wouldn't there be an argument potentially to increase the amount of interest paid and set a limit on the duration? Like, I mean, couldn't, yep. I mean, isn't there a way of, are the, we can actually benefit as a province from this where it's yep. like, okay, well, increase the amount that you're charging for these, for the deferral, and then set it for like maybe a 5-year max or a 10-year max.
Also yep. bump the age and bump the age because like, I think even France, you can't retire.
Or do an income screen. I the problem with income screening and stuff like that is then I feel like it will create another 10% of the bureaucracy to stream the income. So I mean, isn't there just easy low-hanging fruit we can do?
There's definitely easy low-hanging fruit, and it's pretty simple. If you wanted to reform the program as you're discussing, my first instinct would say if your home is worth, and the provincial government has all of this information about what your home is worth with their property assessment scheme, they could easily say if you have a home that's worth more than $1 million, you don't get the subsidy. And they could charge a market rate for interest. And that market rate, I mean, BC still has fairly low borrowing costs. So we could charge, which I think BC is borrowing at about 3.5% right now. So we could be charging these beneficiaries 4.5-5%.
Yeah,
compounding interest, on top. Which is still pretty decent. That's still a below market rate. So they would still benefit. And then we would be the province would be profiting at the same time. So there's
this
really...
This is why I think doing away with it is maybe not the right angle, Phil. I think maybe just...
Yeah, I understand that there's always reaction. But, you know, if you shoot for the stars, you get the moon.
But also, I mean, I guess in... Presumably, Phil, what you're in a perfect world, what you would see happen is more houses trade hands, right? Like we'd yes. see the dislodging of underused housing, right?
It's not a forced sale. I just want to touch base on you, Adam. It's not a forced sale. You're talking about making people face an economic reality and letting them decide what they want to do. They want to borrow more against their home, they can and fund their lifestyle, then that's fine. If they want to choose to sell and move on, that's fine. I'm just saying you shouldn't be relying on the taxpayer to allow you to live over house.
Sure. I do think there's a lot of policy that has put people in situations where they've had to sell their vacation home or property. Like a lot of people used to have pied-à-terres here. There are a lot of people that are being, and maybe they should be, or maybe they shouldn't, but people that are being forced to sell something that they bought under different rules, essentially. That's what a lot of people would argue, right? So yeah. this feels like another layer of policy that makes property owners go, well, wait a second. Now I'm in this situation where it's not deciding to move on to another segment or chapter of my life. It's that I can't afford to hang on because of new rules.
Yep. And I can understand.
That feels forced to me.
I can understand why you would say that feels forced. But, and you know, as the great American philosopher Thomas Sowell said, there's never solutions. It's always a trade-off. And so, yes, I can totally appreciate where you're coming from on that side, where someone might feel that they're being forced out of their home. I would ask you to just take a pause and think for a moment, though, about the 95% of people under the age of 40 who will never even be able to afford a home.
No, and I get that. I just don't know if it's at the solution of...
But the other thing is that, and I'm just put this out there, if you own a home, you should expect to pay property taxes, right?
Yes.
Like it's not that we're necessarily forcing them out of their home. It's that I guess the argument would be that you were told you don't have to pay property taxes for the last 30 years or whatever, and the rules switch and that's bad. But it's a reasonable expectation that you should pay property taxes as a homeowner.
Yeah. And especially too, you think about it in every other aspect of the Canadian economy. If someone succeeds and has tremendous benefit, there's always an expectation that you're going to be paying more taxes.
These people have succeeded and benefit tremendously from the housing crisis, and we're not even asking them to stump up and pay their fair share.
Right. That makes sense.
And as again, property taxes in British Columbia are extremely low. I mean, you've got a $3 million house and you can't afford to pay 12 grand? Come on.
I think I had one more question for you, but I'm trying to think of it here. I think we covered it, honestly. So yeah, give us a couple more food for thought items here, Phil.
This is Dan Levitt. He is the advocate for BC seniors. That is a government position equivalent to a deputy minister at the provincial level. His job is to advocate for seniors on their behalf. From what I understand, he's a pretty nice guy and he does a good job. He is one of the main proponents of this subsidy. He's out in senior centers and obviously out promoting it because he was the one that said, only 18% of our seniors are getting this. We need to get this out there for more of them. And that's his job. So that's what he's doing. And I have no truck with that whatsoever. He has publicly disclosed that he receives this subsidy. And again, I don't hate the player, I hate the game. And he's actually actively campaigning to expand the subsidy program. And he even has some arguments that I think are worth listening to. He wants to include the subsidy program to allow seniors also to access the loan to pay for things like their strata fees or their utilities. And I think that's worth listening to. But he is a perfect example of everything that's wrong with this subsidy program, because he lives in a multi-million-dollar home in Vancouver and receives a government salary of $237,000. Do you think that's the kind of person that should be getting housing subsidies?
We'll leave it to the listener.
Right.
Phil, here as a final question, because you said this was before we went. sorry, I totally missed that. That was good. As a final kind of thought, because we talked about this before we went live, and I think before Adam was even on the call, there are subsidies for people with children, right? So it does strike me as, you know, the people that I run into that are, you know, are struggling with daycare costs, are struggling, like that to me is a real, it's a very, very challenging province and a very, very challenging city for most young families. There are some program that's kind of similar, as I understand.
Yes. If you have children that are under the age of 18, or if you're supporting a disabled person, you can qualify for a similar program that allows you to defer paying your property taxes. However, they charge a much higher rate of interest for those people. Seniors are the ones that get the discounted interest rate.
That seems crazy.
And does it compound? Does it compound?
I think for families, it's non-compounding. But I think, like, for example, last year for families, the rate was 6%. But the rate for seniors last year was 3.4%. This year, yeah, I think the rate for seniors is going to be it's supposed to be below Canada Bank of Prime Lending, which right now is 2.25%. So seniors are probably going to be getting their loan at about probably 2%, non-compounding, paid back with the tax-free proceeds of their home.
I can see Matt thinking about this, like, can I beat that in the stock market? And I think this is exactly, I see your point, but that's the thing. It needs to be, why would it be for young families 6%? Like that seems to me like that's, and that seems like the discrepancy between the rate, like,
wildly seems unfair. A bit.
Well, you remember this guy here with his $30 million mansion on 55th and Oak. He runs a hedge fund. So what do you think he's doing with that $90,000 in tax savings every year? He's investing it in the market. And we had Michael Geller as well admitted the same thing. He's fully on record saying, I don't pay my taxes and I'm putting that money in the market and I'm profiting from this. Meanwhile, I can't afford a home.
Yeah.
So if you guys want that article on Generation Squeeze, I can talk a little bit more there because it talks more about the scale and really who's benefiting from the subsidy. Like, for example, in the city of Vancouver, there's about 10,000. In 2024, the city of Vancouver had 10,000 homes that are benefiting from the subsidy. So to put that in perspective, that's about the same number of homes as you have in the city of Langford. No, what was it?
Langford, maybe.
Langford? Yeah. Oh, 10,000 homes. That's basically a small city. So that's 40,000, or 20,000, 30,000 people or so. You guys are smart cookies in the real estate market. What's the average price of a home in Vancouver?
Like Metro Vancouver or like the city of Vancouver? Index?
What is it like?
No, Vancouver. City of Vancouver.
No, across the board. HPI index. So we're around one, isn't it?
1.1.
1.1, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think the average value of a home that's getting this subsidy is in the city of Vancouver?
Ooh.
Okay, I'm going to go with 2.6.
No, that's too high.
Adam?
Hey, Adam, you go. In the city of Vancouver. Actually, if it's in the city of Vancouver, that would suggest the eight. I'm going to go higher. I'm going to go $3 million, the average.
$3.4 million is the average home that's receiving this.
Still too low. Okay.
Wow. I looked at 6 cities in the Lower Mainland.
Suggest more people on the west side are exploiting this.
Well, that's what I mean. Trends older and wealthier.
Yeah.
If you're 62 years old and you have a $500,000 condo in Surrey, your property taxes are what, $1,200? Frig it, just pay it. If you're set, that same person living in a $10 million home in Vancouver, your property taxes are going to be, you know, 45, 50 grand. Now it's worth time and like, oh yeah, okay, let's look into this. You know, let's see if I can do that. And the fun part is every city I looked in, so 6 cities in the Lower Mainland, every city I looked in, the typical home receiving this subsidy is significantly above the average price of a home in that city.
Also, I think that makes sense from a just thinking about, and this is all anecdotal, but the type of person that would be comfortable doing this, right? That is okay with debt, quote unquote debt, and you know, things like that. Totally makes sense. It goes back to the argument about mainly sophisticated investors taking advantage.
Again, don't hate the player, hate the game. And the government is well aware that this program exists. They've seen every year you have to submit application, and they know what your house is worth. They know what your property taxes are, and they go, approved. You're in. The fun part is the city of Vancouver wasn't even the worst offender.
Wait, let's guess.
I'm going to guess.
It's got to be West.
West Vancouver.
City of West Vancouver. 15% of the homes in the city of West Vancouver are benefiting from the subsidy. So that's 2 to 3 every block. Who are being financially discouraged to retire in place, or financially discouraged from downsizing.
So I've been trying to think of all the arguments that would be made to keep this in place as is. And there's a lot of arguments that seem to exist. And I'm sure that, you know, that for the position to keep the tax in place. Here's one I'm just thinking of. Do we have, if people start to sell because they can't afford, so if they don't opt for the reverse mortgage and they start to sell their homes, do we have the, presumably they go to 2 different segments. They go to assisted living or they go to the rental market. Do we have enough housing to support people if we do away this tax?
You know what? That's not something, that's a really good question. And I don't think I've looked into that. I know that we do have, There has been a gap in the rental housing market, that's for sure, because the government has completely screwed up our rental markets by controlling prices. And that is a common complaint that you hear from seniors, is they say, I'd love to downsize and move on, but there's nowhere for me to go. And that just makes me pull out what's left of my hair even further, because it's those same seniors who showed up at every single town hall meeting to shout down every development that's come along because it's going to ruin the integrity of my neighborhood. Whatever. Right. And now there's nowhere for them to go. So, you know, you got me here. Kind of is my
attack. Assisted living too, I think is one of the most limited housing. Yeah.
Well, that's maybe something our buddy Dan Levitt could work on.
Well, I'm just thinking, I'm wondering if that's something the province has considered. And I don't know if they're really trying to keep people in their housing. Houses.
Okay.
Although that would go against.
But also, okay, ahead, so there's, I like this idea of financial incentivizing people not to downsize or right size, right? Because we've heard of this, you know, this makes me think, you know, just thinking about the rental and the assisted living, and go back to your example, Phil, you know, I don't know how large your family is living in a 2-bed condo in East Vancouver where a single woman across the street retired is living in a 4-bedroom house. So I actually think it's the opposite, that this policy creates situations where housing's not being used to its most effective way. And not that people should be forced to move to help make sure that properties are being used effectively, but they shouldn't be incentivized to not move if that's where they're at most, in their life.
Yeah, most subsidies create waste. And you have, in 2024, there were 85,000 homes in British Columbia that were receiving this subsidy, which is essentially the city of Richmond. And so 85,000 homes that were receiving the subsidy, the overwhelming majority of those homes were multi-bedroom homes with one or two people living in them, which is incredibly wasteful in such a tight housing market. You do, but Adam, you do raise a really good point. Like, would there be a place for them to go? Is there assisted living? I'm not sure what that looks like, but I know that there's a lot of empty condos right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tricky one.
Yeah, I like this one, though.
I like it too. I just think I think you'll go further if you can keep it. You know my opinion.
Reform it, yes.
I just think there's it just seems to make more sense. And it doesn't necessarily result in people leaving and needing to go into other housing. Because, I mean, we also need those empty housing potentially for the younger generation as well, starter homes, one bedrooms, etc.
That's kind of the problem. So whereas, you know, the older
subsidy from charging the seniors more. Yeah. We could figure it out maybe next episode. How can people learn more about you, Phil, and what you're up to?
It's a good question because I try to keep a very, very low profile on the internet. I've got a LinkedIn account and that's pretty much it. I've never been on social media.
Oh, and Matt, we should, Phil, do you have time to stick around for the five wire? Five quick lighthearted questions?
Just one more piece of information I'll share with you is I said, City of West Vancouver, 15% of the homes in that city are receiving this housing subsidy. Average value of a home in West Vancouver is $1.9 million. What do you think your typical house on this subsidy program looks like? What's the value?
Oh, it's higher. That would be higher. I'm going to go typical home or the average?
The average home that's benefiting from the subsidy in West Vancouver.
I'm going 3.7.
So, I'm going higher. 4.1.
4 million flat.
Ooh.
So you've got a $4 million over home in West Vancouver.
I think I win that if we're doing the prices right.
I should have been 99 cents.
Yeah. $1. $1.
What is one book that you've read recently that you would recommend for our listeners?
Read a couple of really good ones. Mania by Lionel Shriver that's probably one of the best books I've read in the last year. It's satire, but it is incredibly on the nose. So Lionel Shriver, she wrote We Have to Talk About Kevin, and this book Mania is, as I said, it's satire and it's set in modern day America, and it is decided that it is now wrong to discriminate against people based on their intellect. So stupid becomes the new N-word, and it just starts in school, in education, and this idea perpetrates all through society, and it's just a slow motion destruction of everything falling apart because people are committed to ideology. And it's a really, really clever book because, you know, you're sitting there reading it and it's like, it's supposed to be satire, but that's what my kids go through at school today. Everybody gets a passing grade.
Next question for you, Phil. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Being grateful for what I have.
Gratitude. It's a good one.
Yep. Good.
What are you binge watching or a movie recommendation?
Three Body Problem on Netflix.
It was a
science fiction trilogy written by a Chinese author whose name I can't pronounce, and the guys who made Game of Thrones turned it into a Netflix show, and that's my favorite. It's fantastic. I've watched it three times already, so it's well worth it. Very fun.
I'm gonna write that one down.
You mentioned you're an insomniac. What are you listening to music-wise when you're up late at night doing this research?
Maybe punk and heavy metal. Maybe that's why I can't sleep. I'm all over the place with my music, but I can listen to pretty much anything except hip hop, but punk and metal are my faves.
Nice. Last but not least, something you've bought for under $1,500 that has had a positive impact on your life?
Polarized sunglasses.
Do you really notice the difference?
Yes.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, and I do.
Are you serious, Matt?
Yeah, no, and especially glare? When you're out on the water.
Oh, yeah, the glare.
Once you go black, you'll never go back. Polarized sunglasses, man. Give it a go. It's really worth it.
Yeah, it is well worth it. And everything feels brighter, too. It's mood uplifting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on the water, it cuts down the glare.
Yeah, Yeah. I guess everybody has them now. It's not just Maui Jim anymore. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Jeez. God. Man, you are the perfect. That made you the age for deferral. How can people find out more about you, Phil? Again, your LinkedIn, you're on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way. And in the article, I want to just, I don't think you mentioned that, but your research is on Generation Squeeze, the article that you wrote.
Yep. Housing subsidies for multimillionaires. GenSqueeze.ca.
GenSqueeze.ca.
Yeah. Paul Kershaw does amazing work.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. It's been a lot of fun. So appreciate the time as well.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Phil Webb, concerned citizen. And also he works as an insurance broker at Axis Insurance. I really like that conversation, and yeah. I have something after, you know, it does feel fundamentally unfair, and it's an interesting, there must be some sort of third rail kind of politics here going on. You know, it's so obvious, but politically very difficult to make some changes, but it seems outlandish that in the province with the highest real estate prices, at least in the Lower Mainland, the most folks that have made, you know, millions of dollars off their real estate, that we have the most lenient policies in this regard. It seems a little crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily agree with Phil about throwing it out altogether. I think there's got to be protective measures in place for certain people in their market, in the market, that have maybe owned their home for a long time. And I understand likely why some of these measures exist, but I feel like I have to think about it some more before I weigh in entirely, but I do see the point. Phil's got some really good points on, particularly the people that are in a position where they could clearly pay these taxes and are choosing to.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, clearly pay these taxes, but the incentives with the interest rates are there to actually, you know, there's better ways to use this money. You can definitely get a higher return on these funds than the interest rate the government's charging. So
you know who my heart goes out to is some of these commercial real estate owners where their property taxes are just getting absolutely jacked every single year, to the point that it's like almost impossible for them to hold the real estate, the commercial real estate, and nobody's paying attention because world's smallest violin for the person that owns the commercial real estate. But there's a lot of mom and pop investors that have owned commercial real estate for quite some time that are just getting gouged by certain municipalities. See Victoria, for example, Matt.
Yeah, yes, that is true. The other thing I wanted to say about Phil after we stopped recording was, so Phil does insurance, right? And I said, hey, Phil, do you want us to plug your, you know, are you insuring condos and townhomes and single family homes in the city of Vancouver? As you might guess, no is the answer. Phil literally is a guy who insures like trapeze artists. I'm not even kidding. He's like, I like the complicated stuff.
Trapeze artists.
He's like, I am the guy who, when you can't get insured and you work for Cirque du Soleil, you come to me. And I was like, that's not surprising. That's not surprising in the least. He had a bunch of types of people he's insuring. And to a person, I was like, yep, that fits well. I think that makes a lot of sense. Interesting guy.
Sword swallowers of the world.
Yeah, literally.
What else we got before we cut for the day here, Matt?
What else do we have? Of course, we have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We made the pitch at the start. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to work with you. We have the sold plan for sellers. We have private client services for buyers. You click sell with us, you click buy with us to get in touch. We would love to work with you. That is for sure. We also have the back catalog over there. But other than that, Adam, I think that's a wrap.
And I was just thinking about it, Matt, my little comment about the commercial owners, because really with the triple net lease, they're passing that on to businesses, right? So, I mean, it's bad all around. That was my point. Makes it very hard for businesses to support themselves and for it to make sense. So anyways, yeah, you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
You can also try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week and we're back.
We also have, wait.
Oh, yeah.
You got that nonpartisan line.
Yes, of course.
At VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We did that backwards. for the first time in 500 episodes.
Well, have a great week, and we're back here next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.